On July 24th, 2016, Abdi Rahman Abdi, a 37-year-old man from the Hintonburg community, died during a violent altercation with police. He had no criminal history and had posed no threat to the lives or safety of the officers he was dealing with. I am Jamisha Millard, and the Justice for Abdi Rahman Coalition's chair, Faria Ahmed, took the time to speak with me about the upcoming verdict in the trial for Abdi Rahman's death. We also touched base on their stance on police practices and the impacts it has on our community and what needs to change.
I just want to touch base on the ongoing trial for the death of Abdi Rahman Abdi and Constable Monson's verdict, updates on the coalition, and your stance on current police practices. So my first question is, do you have any current updates on how the trial for the death of Abdi Rahman Abdi is going based on the latest court appearance?
Yes, well, the closing remarks and closing arguments took place in July, and I believe the verdict is planned now for October 20th, which is actually next week. Yeah. And it is a bit of a peculiar situation simply because of the way COVID is going. So a lot of details about the actual proceedings are not fully determined. But if you're familiar with the Miller verdict that took place in the summer in Toronto in June, my understanding is that it will run similar to that. So it will be a online Zoom presence for the public, given that in person, you know, the courtroom is not going to be something, you know, a public audience. The people will be able to follow the reading by Judge Kelly virtually.
Okay, and that's going to be on YouTube?
Yes, there will be a live streaming. I believe that it's either going to be a public live streaming on YouTube or it's going to be a limited Zoom link, meaning that there will be a number of people allowed to enter, similar to the closing remarks that took place this summer, and then it'll be capped. I don't know what it will be capped at or how many people they would be allowing in. The family, of course, and JFA, you have reserved links provided to them. Media will also have guaranteed spots, but I'm not sure how that's being arranged.
Perfect. So my second question is, as one of your objectives is to obtain greater transparency, do you think you've been able to obtain that within this trial so far?
Well, the trial itself, we haven't been involved in, aside from providing support to the family during proceedings. But specifically, what we were looking for in terms of transparency and policing, we did put quite a lot of effort into policing oversight and accountability through our work on the legislation. And that has been an up and down roller coaster. I'm not sure how familiar you are with the last few years, but we were very successful in modifying the legislation that governs policing and police oversight. So from 2016 to 2018, we had been advocating and doing our own research and working with Justice Michael Tulloch, who was assigned to conduct a review of the Policing Act. And in March 2018, we were successful in getting a bill passed through the legislature. It was called Bill 175, the Safer Ontario Act, and it had very specific elements that we put forward. And this was concerning the governing bodies, so the Ontario Policing Oversight Bodies, as well as the Special Investigations Unit. And so for transparency, if you remember with the Abdi case, it took over 8 months for the investigation to be completed. And this was quite troublesome. Of course, you know, having lost a son, it was further pain to just have to wait for an investigation to be determined on whether charges would be laid. The recommendation we put forward was that there should be a minimum amount of time for the SIU to complete its investigation. Part of the problem in the SIU completing its investigation was that police officers, which is who is being investigated most of the time, have no obligation to comply with the investigation. And so often the investigation was delayed because of delay tactics and also a non-compliance of those being investigated or the police institutions that were being investigated. And so we put in a non-compliance measure that would, you know, oblige a police service and those being investigated to comply with the investigation. That was a major win. But shortly after the bill was passed, there was an election, a new government came in, and that legislation was repealed.
if Constable Monson is officially convicted and the verdict is in the family's favor, what are you hoping to get out of it?
I think that, you know, the verdict really is a really complicated situation in terms of, you know, there is expected that regardless of which side or which end it falls on or in whose favor it falls on, it will be a difficult one for the community to accept. Of course, you can see just from the challenges with passing the legislation that there are very strong views on both sides. Now, I think that more importantly, the verdict itself, while it may bring solace or comfort to either party, it's not going to fix the problem. I think part of the problem is the way the legislations are written, where it is the balance and the favor is placed on policing and not in public safety. And so that is our view, and we continue to fight that battle. We have successfully launched a recent campaign in September, and that was a letter campaign that we launched, kind of placing back on the map three most critical components of the legislation we feel need to be changed. The non-compliance measure is one of them, but also the fact that, as you are aware, Monson is currently on suspension with pay.
Mm-hmm.
And since he's been charged of manslaughter, aggravated assault, and assault with a weapon, he has been collecting taxpayer-funded salary of nearly or over $500,000. And so we think that that's a major problem. So we've put forward measures that would see authority being given in very special circumstances, such as being charged with a violent crime, where the discretion would be given to a chief to be able to suspend an officer without pay in very particular circumstances. And then the other one is the questions around how the verdict would be brought forth. So a major challenge in conviction. I think in the history of Ontario, there's only been one police officer convicted of a violent crime. And so the problem with that is that the legislation gives the balance of probability. So the, you know, the police officers, meaning that if there is any reasonable doubt, regardless of the outcome of, you know, what the officer had inflicted on an individual, you cannot convict. And so that's a major challenge. This was a major lesson learned from the Miller verdict, where the judge, for the first time, actually said that, you know, on all counts of probability, two Terrio brothers were guilty of the crime. However, because of the balance of probability measures in the legislation, it is almost impossible to convict. So just to bring it back to your question, you know, while we hope for justice to be served, and, you know, and our view is that, you know, we don't have the jurisprudence on this. Like, the judge is going to be making the decision based on his extensive experience, but our view is that, you know, this is a situation where, to the ordinary citizen, this is a very unfair matter before, you know, for the public and the judge, but it is before the judge. And so while it is his decision, our hope is that there is, you know, whatever the verdict is that it is very carefully explained, and that whatever justice is made publicly understandable.
How do you think it will impact the community if he is not convicted? What are the possible outcomes of a non-conviction, according to you?
You know, when Abdurrahman first lost his life, the reaction from the community was very visceral. Like, it was a really emotional time. You know, on any reasonable person's perspective, the death of a fellow citizen at the hands of someone whose duty it was to protect is a very challenging reality to grapple. The issue around a non-conviction is going to be, at the very least, offensive to many. That is the pulse that we have from the community. Of course, like I said, it's expected that the judge will read a verdict and that it will take several hours. So the understanding is that the judge, whatever the verdict is going to be explaining all the reasons. And that's part of our democracy. We need to be given the facts. And so the judge will read these facts. You know, it's really hard to predict exactly how people will react, but I can tell you that listening to and receiving the Miller verdict was a very emotional, emotionally charged time. And so my expectation is, you know, that this will be a precedent-setting case and that people will be watching it very closely.
Are there any recent concerns within the community that you would know of? Is there any updates on how your fight for social justice is coming along? Any new ideas?
Well, we're very pleased with the direction that our campaign concerning the legislation is going. Like I said, we recently launched a letter campaign, and we encourage Ontarians to go on our website, www.justiceforprotectmen.ca, to sign on to the letter requesting that the Premier take charge of the, you know, on the heels of this verdict. It would be wonderful to see the government understand that there are very critical pieces governing policing that need to be mended in order for the community to feel safe. And we've outlined at least three measures that need to be applied very quickly and immediately to the current legislation. And so that is something that we feel very strongly about. Very recently, the mayor of Ottawa, Jim Watson, and the chair of the Police Service Board, Diane Dean, put forward a motion supporting one of our calls to action, which was the item around the discretion being provided to choose to suspend an officer without pay. And so we were very pleased to see that this motion was put forward in Ottawa City Council, and that two other mayors in Ontario followed suit, so Brampton and Mississauga. And I hope that the Premier takes note of that. These are very notable mayors who have taken a position, and the chair of the police board as well, in Ottawa, taking a position on that very important matter. At the very least, our view is that, you know, not only does, when we're talking about accountability was one of our core objectives, this is the kind of accountability. We're talking about public funds, but also, you know, the very thought that should an officer be charged with a criminal offense to see them without a salary, that should be a determinant for some, you know, deter somebody from, or at least think twice before committing a violent act. Mm-hmm. In our case, you know, where we see that, you know, should Monsignon be cleared of these charges, it sends a very clear message to policing that no matter what you do, even if it's to beat a man in broad daylight, you will be safe. You will continue to receive your salary paid for by public funds. You will not be held accountable for any of those actions. And that, I think that's the very message that this conviction, or the verdict, I should say, is going to be really critical in terms of messaging and the signal it's going to tip the community one way or another.
What are some impacts that current police practices have on the community?
Well, we saw again another investigation being taken on by the SIU of a dynamic entry that took place in a apartment building in the east end of Ottawa. Of course, the details of this situation are yet to be completely put forth. The investigation is ongoing. But here is another situation where the judgment on those conducting these kinds of tactical, you know, responses, it's very confusing to the public. Like, nothing is adding up. You know, the process that was used, this dynamic entry, has even been called out by a judge that it, you know, it actually is not a very good practice, especially when, you know, what you're dealing with is there's a young family that's in the apartment building. Is that really the way you want to go about it? So the impact that this has is that complete disregard for human life, and more specifically, complete disregard for, you know, people, Black, Indigenous, and, you know, other people of color. More times than not, it's our communities that are dealt with in this manner. And until there is a stop to that, or at least some accountability, then, you know, the impact is going to continuously be that there is a citizenry that is not as valuable, or that is not worthy of protection in the same way as another demographic of people. If I just go back to the objectives that we set out as a group tackling these issues, the number one thing that accountability is is severely lacking. Transparency is severely lacking, and this and oversight is also lacking. So as an organization, we are committed to pursuing these things very closely and doing the best that we can to address them. A lot of it has to do with legislation, but more importantly, the willingness, because legislation is also something that's put forth by those that are elected. So our elected officials need to be aware of what the community wants and needs, and the community has a very important role to play in that regard. They have to be active citizens and demonstrate their needs for and their desire for change. And so really, I think the onus is both on policing, where they need to be, you know, just respectful and understand and provide dignity to all citizens, regardless of their position, their social or economic class. And mm-hmm. also the onus is on citizens to act actively within the democracy and be the changes they want to see, ensuring that their local and provincial representatives who have the power to make these changes, make them aware that these changes are needed. And the politicians need to act responsibly and move swiftly and take decisive action on things that concern human life.
Thank you so much for your time, Faria. I really appreciate it.
All right, thank you. Take care. Bye-bye.
Take care.
I am Jamisha Millard, and you just heard my short interview with Faria Ahmed, Chair of the Justice for Abdi Rahman Coalition. Stay tuned for next week's verdict on October 20th, and go ahead and support the coalition's new campaign at justiceforabdirahman.ca. This news story was made possible by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada.